This is Dyslexic Design Thinking. For the past 25 years, Gil Gershoni has been the head of his own branding agency, Gershoni Creative. And one of the things he's passionate about rebranding is his dyslexia. In this series, Gil sits down with members of the dyslexic community for eye-opening conversations about the intersection of dyslexia and creativity, and what dyslexia can teach us about ourselves and the world around us. Today, Gil talks to Rukhsana Begum, a world champion kickboxer, boxer, and author. Enjoy.
Welcome, Rukhsana.
Thank you for having me.
It's so lovely to have you today. I've been looking forward to speaking with you for a long time, and I'm glad we were able to find some time. When did you first know you wanted to become a kickboxer?
When I first walked into the gym, and I remember being paired up with other females in the gym that were a lot bigger than me, a lot stronger than me, a lot older than me. And I was only a little girl at the time, 17, 18 at the time, and very petite, never even wore a pair of gloves in my life. And I remember holding my own, and it was my sheer willpower that got me through each and every round. And I outskilled them because I had natural ability like speed, the focus, not willing to give up. Those were things, that mental toughness that I had, I was able to display. And my coach noticed that. And he knew I had something special from that day. And I remember him coming over to me and said, "I don't worry about you. There's a lot of people, you either have it or you don't. You can teach someone to fight, but can they fight?" So him saying that to me spoke volumes to me, that he had a lot of students in that gym and a lot of people just knew the technical side but didn't have that heart and that desire to really push through the pain barrier and come out on the other side. But I did. And I think knowing that, I knew I could accomplish anything. I knew I could become a world champion. Hence, I kept going and wow. I dragged him along my journey because he wanted me to retire at many, many hurdles and said he's had enough bad decisions, facing racism. There's so many things that you encounter. And what I realized, good isn't good enough. You have to be exceptional. And that's what I kind of set out to do.
Amazing. And being a dyslexic, I know that Muhammad Ali was also dyslexic. Did you know that when you were inspired?
I didn't. No, absolutely not. I never thought Muhammad Ali was dyslexic. But I can imagine why, because it helps you visualize so much more. I think this is what gave me an edge in the ring.
Amazing. I can tell you definitely see when you watch him fight, I'm watching you fight. It's like you're in the zone. There is a different process, different timing, and just being, you know, seeing your opponent and seeing the ring in a different way. Do you relate to that?
Absolutely. I think what's so interesting is that growing up, I always felt that I was dumb and I wasn't as conventionally smart as my siblings. And my parents always felt the same. They were never rude towards me, but they always felt that I wasn't as smart as my older brother or my younger sister. And I was much more creative. I loved art. I loved physical exercise. But what I realized later on is that I was always thinking outside the box, and I was able to attain a degree in architecture. I was able to do so much more because I had a very creative mind. And that's what I was able to apply and tap into in my sport.
How does your dyslexia influence the way you train and prepare for a match?
At first, I used to try and follow the convention, you know, try and use a template that every other athlete uses. The more I got to know myself, I understood I have my special skills that I need to be able to really tap into, and which was me visualizing technique and strategies and then being able to apply that under pressure. And that's something I've seen other athletes drill, and they'll do certain things where it's a lot of fitness based. Whereas for me, I found my superpower was visualization. I wouldn't even have to rehearse certain skills, but I would be able to apply it because I've rehearsed it so many times in my mind. It comes naturally to me when I'm in the ring.
I can very much relate to the visualization. So many of us as dyslexic can actually fully see it. And then by the time we have to apply whatever it is we're doing, we already feel like we experienced it already. Yes?
Absolutely.
Do you see any parallels between the challenges of living with dyslexia and the challenges of facing an opponent?
Really good question. I think initially, yes, because when you step into the ring, there's so many fear, there's so many emotions that you have to overcome. But your true strength lies within you and the conviction and knowing yourself and your strengths and being able to really bring that uniqueness that you have out in the open. And quite often we don't know ourselves and we try and be like everyone else. We try and match everyone else's skills, but we don't need to. We need to know what we're good at and then really deliver that at the highest level, reach our true potential. And I think we're quite often consumed by certain emotions that we give too much power to, whereas really it's okay to be fearful. You need to lean into whatever emotions you have and let it pass and let it really give you that fire that you need.
It's interesting you're talking about emotion, because I know a lot of dyslexic myself as well, you know, grew up with a lot of pain because of the dyslexia, some shame.
Yes.
You said a minute ago, you know, I was labeled stupid and unable. And no matter how much I tried to be average, I couldn't. How do you deal with that pain? What's some of the techniques that helps you push through that pain?
I guess now I don't try and compare myself to anyone else. Whereas when I was at university, I was always feeling like I wasn't good enough because I can't match the linear way of thinking. There was no way I could do that. But what I realized was what separated me from my peers was my creativity, because I could still do the assignment, but in my own way. And in fact, that scored much more highly because it's not a conventional way of thinking. And I think that's when I realized, wait a minute, I'm still doing the same work, but in a very different method that I was using. And it was the same in design. My brain would think so fast. When I was given an assignment, I would skip the basic steps and get to the end result very quickly. And I think that's what dyslexic people are very good at doing. We don't always follow the minimal procedures. We try and see the bigger picture very quickly. And it's just about understanding, really. And I love being dyslexic now because I feel that I have a uniqueness that I can present to the world. And we all have uniqueness, but it's been really able to shine that.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. I also transformed very similar to yours from the shame and the pain to get to a place where actually I'm so proud about it right now, being dyslexic. Mm. And I can also relate to the thinking very fast. You know, sometimes it feels that it's like it's in a blink of an eye, it can sort of compress a lot of thoughts or a lot of perspective all at the same time. And I would imagine as an architect with your background and, you know, as a designer, as a boxer, what a talent to be able to sort of be in the ring or be in a creative environment where you need to think very fast and see all of the opportunities all at once. Do you find that as part of your gift in the ring?
Absolutely. I think once I'm in the zone and I let the fear pass and really become present in the moment, I've noticed that I can see the whole round in my mind, how it's going to elevate, how I'm going to defend myself, how I'm going to move. You can slow down time. You know exactly how you're going to feel. And it's something that I can see. I can anticipate everything that's going to happen. And that's when I perform my best. And the times that I'm too in my head and I'm in my emotions, I'm not always as good as I could be because I'm not present enough. I'm too blocked. So the moment I let my visualization take through, my spirit fight through me, I'm in a different realm. I feel that I'm floating.
Who inspired you to become a fighter?
I never, ever thought I would become a fighter. I mean, I loved sports growing up. I guess I always thought I would have a normal 9-to-5 job. But what I realized was once I pursued architecture that my strength as a Thai boxer at the time, what I noticed was I was naturally talented, yet I still had to work really hard and be really focused and disciplined in order to become a British champion. And that's what inspired me because I realized, wait a minute, talent isn't enough. It's no way enough. It's about dedication. It's about being consistent. It's about being focused. It's about self-belief. It's about rising above the obstacles that present itself. It's all of those skills that you have to cultivate in order to become a champion. And I think that's what really inspired me to be able to challenge myself physically, emotionally, spiritually. These are things that haven't been tested in other aspects of my life. And the skills that I've been able to learn through boxing, the art of Muay Thai and boxing, I've been able to apply in all aspects of my life.
Mm. What's some of the mantras that you live by?
This view, one of the famous sayings by Rumi is, it's your road to walk and yours alone. Others can walk with you, but it's your road to walk alone. And I love that because the moment you really want support and a friend or a parent with you, you realize even if they wanted to be there, they might be traveling somewhere or they're unavailable or they're not well. You really have to face your own demons in life. And you need to have faith and courage to be able to do that. So whatever realm you're going into, whether it's politics, education, media, you're going to face obstacles. But only you can cross that bridge.
I love that. And a lot of things you were talking about, what makes a champion is things that for our audience, as you, no matter what age you are, as you're trying to understand your dyslexia, your gift, it's really that process of bringing your best self forward and working through some of those moments of pain and building the inner confidence to be able to take on those kind of challenges.
Absolutely. I think, like you said, with dyslexia, there's so much shame and the fact that we're not good enough in certain subjects and the conventional way of education, for example, and then being able to really tap into your superpower, that's a certain skill because we all have doubts. We're so conditioned by society and what we're said and the affirmations around us. If your teacher keeps telling you that you're not good or you should be in the B team, not the A team, you start believing them because you respect them. You value these people in your life. And it's very hard to be able to set aside other people's opinion and talk to yourself and have an inner dialogue and talk to your spirit and say, what do I think? And value yourself over other people's opinions. And it could be 100 years of society telling you that it can't be done. And I've been told this many, many times. And I have to take a step back and I said, well, that's because it's never been done before. Well, that's because of fear. But what do I really believe? I believe I can do this. Yes, of course, I'm going to meet obstacles on the way. That's part of growth. That's what makes you expand and grow into your full version. Nothing comes easy. So it's being able to recognize that and having that inner dialogue with yourself and not letting other people's opinion drown out yours.
In 2020, you published an award-winning memoir. How did you know it was time to share your story? How did that come about?
So when I became a British champion in Muay Thai kickboxing, what I realized was I was the only Muslim, Asian, petite female from a minority background that had accomplished something like that, especially from my background. It was unheard of for Western women to go into a male-dominated gym, let alone from someone from my background. So I realized that I had a unique story. And what I needed to do is share that with the world because I believe that you learn from other people's success, you learn from other people's mistakes. And I truly believe that it'll inspire the next generation, especially from people of minority backgrounds, because I look at people and I feel inspired. And I think, wow, it's so subconscious, on a subconscious level, I'll see something and I'll think, wow, she can do it, I can do it. Like yesterday, I was watching a female boxer who's similar to my age. And it's interesting because constantly I'm told I'm too old. And especially being in a male-dominated industry, I'm told, oh, you know, as a female, you may need to retire. But when I saw this female, similar age to me, just go out and win 3 world titles, I thought, you know what? That inspired me, because nothing is off limits if you truly believe. Your body, your mind commands, your body will follow any instructions that you give it.
What was the most difficult part of the writing process for you as you were writing the book?
So the most difficult part was actually not difficult, but it was emotional for me. Because it was like a therapy session where I had to revisit the hard times that I've been through, the challenging times, the setbacks, the amazing times, you know, the memories that I shared with my grandparents growing up in a small apartment in the heart of London. So those were really emotional moments, and I had to really conquer those emotions and really put my truth and essence into the book. And I think I cried so much whilst writing the book, but I believed in telling my truth because I know other people would be able to relate to that. And I believe it's a story of obstacles that we all face regarding bullying, being able to become your own best friend, doubts, fears, coming from a traditional background, trying to overcome the normal society that we're, you know, the community that we're brought up in. And those were all challenges that I faced. And I think it's so relatable on so many levels from people from all backgrounds, because we all face fear. We all face that conflicted views. And how do we overcome that? And I guess that's where I share my truth and how I managed to do that.
Wow. Was writing the book healing for you as well? It sounds like it.
Absolutely. I think it was a really beautiful thing for me to be able to share my story. And I never once thought it'd become the sports book of the year or to be shortlisted for the book of the 21st century alongside Muhammad Ali. That was a remarkable thing. But I think because I threw my whole essence into the book, people connected with it in so many levels. And that's what makes you the best version of yourself. That's what makes you a champion in your field, is being able to highlight your darkness and the light that you have within you, to recognize both, because we all have the dark, the shadow side, as well as the light side, but don't hide it. Bring it out to the open, and that's how you conquer it.
That makes a lot of sense. I know that sometimes when I have these kind of feelings, you know, if I run away from them, they tend to chase me.
Absolutely.
But if I face them, right, and that's probably, yes, and you face them, all of a sudden you are able to sit with it. And maybe in the beginning, it's a bit harder, but you get to know them and they become more of part of you, like you said, become your friend, and you can understand your whole self. And I know that it's not the easiest thing to do, but it seems like you've done it again and again. I understand the book is now being made into a series. Tell us, yes, a little bit about that, and how's that going?
So currently I've just signed a film deal. So we are discussing the option to become a feature film, and really excited. I want to see how this book can transpire into a real life film. And, you know, I'm really excited to be able to share my story with the world, because I think it would help so many women and so many young people to really face different challenges that I faced in my life, such as ME, depression, panic attacks, mental health. Those are all things that most of us go through at some stage of our life. And, you know, being the best version of yourself doesn't mean that you eliminate these emotions or challenges that you face. It's about conquering them and coming out on the other side. And like you mentioned, it's about knowing yourself and sitting with your emotions. I think the moment you bring self-awareness to it, those kind of emotions dissipate anyway. They don't have any power over you, but you have to recognize it and then let it just kind of diffuse.
Yeah, I love the way you just described that. You know, it's not an intuitive thing to do, because you don't want to feel the shame. You don't want to feel the pain. You don't want to feel whatever is you going through. So your first reaction is, how do I avoid it?
Yes. But
by avoiding it, you are moving away from it. And by moving away from it, you give it more charge. By giving more charge, you solidify the relationship that there is a discord within you, or, you know, the way you feel about yourself. So it makes all the sense in the world. I'm moving toward it. As you just said, embracing that part of you takes the charge and dissipates it. And how old were you when you were diagnosed with dyslexia?
So I was 17 at the time. So I went through secondary school not knowing I was dyslexic. And I remember every time I went to do maths, my tutor would try and put me in the lower division. And I really didn't want to be because I would get the answers correct. However, I couldn't always show my process of thinking, and especially with algebra. So they would naturally think I copied someone else. But the way my brain functioned, like I said, it works really fast. I can already jump to three steps ahead of everyone else. But it was crucial, I guess, for the examiners to see how you arrived at that conclusion. So those were the challenges that I faced in school. And I just thought maybe I'm not smart. But later on, when I was in secondary school, I took up art for my A-levels. And then my art teacher, she said, "Oh, Sarah, I think you're dyslexic. You should get tested." So the sixth form college that I was at, they provided a tutor to come in and a diagnosis to take place, whether I was dyslexic or not. And after that, they diagnosed me. And thankfully, obviously, it was a shock at first because I didn't really know what dyslexia was. I just felt really ashamed. And I thought, oh, my parents were right. I'm not that smart. I've got a disability here. But then I realized when I went to university, I was keeping up with everyone. And in fact, just that 10, 15 minutes extra that was given to read really was helpful, even though I never used it. Just knowing that I had those 10 minutes extra to revisit and understand certain questions, because I don't read as fast, I need a little bit more time to read, really made a difference for me.
Yeah, it's amazing how just a little bit of, in that case, time to read, or a little bit of assistance around what we are doing, what we can do so well, you know, reading and writing is a little challenging for some of us, can make all the difference in the world. What was your childhood like before you were diagnosed?
I would always say I was a free spirit, but I was always confined into a box. And I didn't like that because I never really fully came into my own. So I was trying to be one thing or another at home. I was trying to be this traditional daughter for my parents, trying to live up to all their values and expectations. At school, I wasn't as smart as some of my friends because I wasn't going through the same process as them. So there were so many expectations to conform to different societies. When I was with my family, I had to be a certain way. When I was at school, I had to be a certain way. When I was by myself, I was a little bit lonely. But I think the moment I finished university, I slowly started discovering who I am and what my strengths are. And that's when I really thrived in life.
Where did encouragement come from during these times?
So what's quite interesting is that I actually had an arranged marriage straight after my university. So I finished my degree in architecture, started working, and my parents felt that I needed to get married because it was, you know, I came from a very traditional upbringing. And being a dutiful daughter myself, I thought, okay, this is, you know, the right thing to do. And I did want a little bit more time to work and really figure out who I am. But my family had certain expectations. So I went ahead with it because I didn't know any better at the time. And that's when I had a bit of a culture shock. Even though I came from a traditional family, going into someone else's family was, I broke down. I had panic attacks. I was suffering from depression. There was nothing that was bad, but I think I suppressed myself and repressed my emotions to a point where I started suffering from panic attacks and I got overwhelmed. And there was no one to talk to. No one understood what I was going through. Thankfully, my GP happened to be Indian, and she said to me, "Can you pick yourself back up? This is the worst form of panic attacks I've ever seen." And then I think she took my parents aside, held their hand and said, "Look, you're going to lose your daughter if you don't bring her home and give her some breathing space." And I think, thankfully, my father was quite open-minded. He wasn't thinking about the shame in the community or the traditional expectations that our community had upon us, especially being a divorcee. They didn't want that. They felt that that was a very shameful thing to have my father actually took me home, and I was bedridden for around 6 months, where I was having severe panic attacks. Every 10, 15 minutes, I would have a panic attack, and I felt that my body was exhausted, and I was on antidepressants. So it was an incredibly tough time for me. I think that was the lowest point in my life. I lost my health, my job, my marriage, and couldn't see a way out. But that was a blessing in disguise for me, because one day I woke up and I said to myself, this is not who I am. I can't be on drugs to get some sleep. I need to find who I am. And then the only thing I remember that I truly loved and was passionate about was my training, my boxing training. That was the only thing that felt familiar to me. So I took myself back to the gym to heal myself. And my parents actually took a step back at that point, because they realized it's a choice between having their daughter in their life or losing her. And I think this is why they allowed me to go to the gym. And it made a difference, the fact that my GP was Indian and she understood exactly what I was going through and was able to communicate that with my parents. So it was one of the darkest times in my life, but one of the most blessed times, because it allowed me to suddenly become free. And my parents turned a blind eye to my training. They never said, yes, you can go to the gym. However, they never stopped me. And I saw that as the silent consent.
Wow. Amazing. What a transformation. When did it click for you that dyslexia could be a positive rather than a negative?
I think I always knew deep down that I had special attributes. I just needed to lean more into those attributes. I love being creative. I love colors. I love shapes. I love fashion. I love, like, this is one of the things that when I went into architecture, my first ever boss, who was the director of the company, and he said to me, Roxana, a lot of people have money, but they don't have style. But you have style and elegance, and you understand shapes and colors and balance. And I think that was a gift. So I needed to then bring that out. And I guess I do that better physically now, because I'm able to rehearse certain things in my mind with the boxing. I can express myself fully. Whereas in architecture, there's still limitations in terms of, will the structure, you know, support itself? So you need to do a lot of mathematics and physics. So I felt quite restricted. They were not my strengths, but the design was. I love the design aspect of it.
What has been the reaction of fellow dyslexic to your journey?
I guess I love talking to dyslexic people because they're on the same wavelength. When I communicate something, they understand me straight away, which is such a lovely thing. Whereas when I'm communicating with someone else, I feel as though I need to speak a little bit slower and educate them in my theory, which is not a bad thing, because I love learning, because they teach me something and I teach them. But I guess with someone who's also dyslexic, we kind of arrive at the same conclusion almost at the same time. So that's the beauty of it, is that we have this excited reaction, which is quite animated at the time.
Yeah, I can definitely relate. Every time I meet another dyslexic person around the world, it's as if you find another lost sibling. You know, yes. It's a different wavelength, and we can understand it. And, you know, folks out there often think that dyslexia is a learning disability. Really, everything we do is through the lens of dyslexia, because we're dyslexia through and through, you know. So as you said earlier, I think that we all have that superpower and that hyper ability. And when we get together,
yes,
we're able to sort of think and move and jump around in the way,
yes,
the way we do. And I also relate to the fact that, you know, like doing it with others that maybe are not dyslexic or different minds, it's nicer to slow down so you can bring everybody along and you can learn from them and you can arrive at whatever destination together. It's a lot nicer to collaborate that way. What have you learned about yourself through your dyslexia and these experiences?
Definitely to enhance my visualization skills. The more I visualize, and with color, with sound, with emotions behind it, the better I perform in life. And whether that's in the ring or outside the ring, it's a really beautiful gift to be able to really enhance those images in my mind. And that's what drives me, if I'm honest, because I see a goal in my head and I keep that image in my head alive. And that's what I work towards each and every day.
Where can people go who wants to learn more about you and your up-and-coming projects?
So they can definitely find me on Instagram, which is RoxanaBegum_MT, or they can reach me through Facebook, Twitter. I've also published my autobiography, which is also on Amazon at the moment, or Waterstone Bookshop. So they can reach out to me in any of those social medias, and I'll be delighted to hear from them. And if there's anything I can support and talk to them about, I would be happy to do so. It's always nice to hear from an objective view and have an open discussion.
Thank you, Roxana, for joining us today. For those of you who are interested in learning more about Roxana, you can follow her on Instagram, check out her YouTube channel, In the Ring with Roxana, and buy her book, Born Fighter, on Amazon. I am Gil Gershoni, and you've been listening to Dyslexic Design Thinking.
If you enjoyed our conversation today, be sure to subscribe to this series wherever you get your podcasts and follow along on Instagram at Dyslexic Design Thinking. You can also drop us a line at dyslexia@gershoni.com to receive our monthly newsletter and learn about our upcoming programming. Dyslexic Design Thinking is produced by Gershoni Creative. Until next time, be well.